Welcome to the Cosmic Business Podcast. I'm Paula Crossfield, a Vedic astrologer, business coach, and CEO of Weave Your Bliss, a company with the goal to help a million spirit-led entrepreneurs build a cosmic business around their genius so that they can earn wildly well and bankroll the change they want to see in the world. A cosmic business is a new paradigm business that believes in collaboration over competition, building a business around your unique genius, aligning to the planets and your intuition, leading with your values, putting your health and the health of the planet first, treating people fairly, and building giving into your business model. Sounds fabulous, right? On this show, I will take you behind the scenes of my thriving multi-six-figure business, including strategy on closing more sales, nurturing your community online, plus astrological insights to optimize your business and life. We'll also feature conversations with spirit-led business owners, creatives, and changemakers to inspire you. I'm coming to you from our regenerative farm in rural Maine, my happy place, where we are currently creating space to welcome community for retreat and earth reconnection. Let's jump into the conversation. Hello and welcome to the podcast. This week, I have an incredible guest you will not want to miss. She's basically an Ayurveda rock star, Kate O'Donnell, and we'll be talking about her new book, which you won't want to miss. But before we jump into that conversation, are you a conscious business owner looking to get more clients and build a business aligned with your purpose and values while honoring your health? Let's be real. We definitely want to be mindful of not burning out. If you've already done that before, you know. If you know, you know. Okay. So maybe you haven't gotten to the income level you want yet, or things just feel harder than they need to be. So if that's you, please be sure to check out the Cosmic Business Lab, which is my year-long program with monthly live calls for strategy, networking, and getting it done support, plus guest speakers and access to all of my courses and tools to help you grow a wildly successful business. The link to learn more and join the Cosmic Business Lab now is in the show notes. So please do check it out. Okay, so Kate O'Donnell has spent the last 25 years traveling through the far reaches of India in search of ancient healing practices to bring back to the United States. Through her own healing journey, Kate experienced firsthand how a holistic system creates lasting health. She's since emerged as a preeminent expert in Ayurveda, the sister science to yoga, and has built her own method customized for modern Americans. Her individualized approach, guiding from disease to ease, has transformed the lives of thousands of people and made her one of the most respected thought leaders in holistic medicine. Kate is a three-time best-selling author, a highly sought-after speaker, and the founder of Ayurvedic Living Institute, where she has educated a generation of practitioners. Kate's highly anticipated Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health drops April 23rd. Thousands continue to heal with Kate through her annual detox programs, community education, and retreats, and are inspired to radiant health by her keynotes. So you can find out more about Kate in the show notes. And without further ado, I am so excited to share with you this conversation with Kate O'Donnell. Hi, Kate. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Paula. Thanks for having me.
I'm excited to have you here to talk about your book that's coming out, Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health. And I'm a big fan of yours, so I'm excited that you have another book coming out. My first kind of place I want to go with you is, you know, there's Ayurveda is a science of life, right? And there's so many ways this knowledge can be kind of filtered through a different lens. So what made you decide to focus on women's health? Like, what was the draw for this particular book?
That's a great question, Paula. I love that because I could write books about so many things, you know, so many things. But the thing that was calling to me was that I kept hearing women discussing like changes in their bodies over time in a way where it was like, I felt like we were being told that we need to fix that. The message that I felt really called to share was that changes are natural. If we just have a language in which to understand and track the changes and know sort of what's pathological and what's natural about these changes, then I just want women to know that it's natural for the body to change. And I think also there's a conversation about aging and how women's bodies specifically change as we get older.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I've noticed is a lot of information that's out there about health in general is like kind of generic for both genders. And so it's kind of interesting because I'm always in my own head, I'm tailoring the things I'm hearing for my own body. You know, like I got really interested in cold plunging, for example. And I was like, okay, doshically, does that suit me? What time of year does that suit me? As a woman during my cycle, should I be doing this? Right. And they don't ever talk about that. Like, I'm a big fan of Huberman Lab, but I'm always like, do an episode about how this affects women's health. Don't just talk about it generally, you know? So that's why it's exciting for me. I work with a lot of Ayurvedic practitioners when the focus can be brought down to something that's very relatable for somebody specific who you're talking to instead of speaking so generally. So maybe we can kind of, I don't know, we can talk a little bit more about that too.
Yeah. I mean, I find in my business, it's probably 90% women. It has been for a long time, and not because I call anything women's health, you know, so my experience in working with bodies is more of working with people who identify as women over the last, you know, 25 years. So that also just happened naturally for whatever reason. And I couldn't write a book on men's health. Right. I really couldn't even begin to. I don't have any experience with that as a practitioner.
Yeah. So tell us how you got started with Ayurveda. I mean, we'll talk more about the book, but I'm just curious. Let's go back in time.
Yeah. Back to age 19 in India, eating street food. And I've been obsessed with India since I was like little. So I went over there as soon as I got the opportunity in college to teach English. And I got so sick, like every kind of parasite, You know, I was in Pondicherry and Oroville at the time. And not like I'm blaming those places. I could have gone anywhere. You know, honestly, I think the first meal I had like off the bus was when I got Giardia. I started on this real process of digestive health because of parasitic infections. And I kept going back and forth to India. And I still do, you know, 25 years later. So I have had a lot of digestive changes and disturbances. And so, you know, when you're in South India and you're sick, it's easier to end up at an Ayurvedic doctor's office than a allopathic. So without like caring or anything, I just kind of ended up under Ayurveda care. That was, I had this just profound experience of a spiritual experience of my body through Ayurveda that I just never looked back after that. I was like, yep, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I am looking for. Then I started studying because of course you wonder like, how did this do that? Well, what was that? What just happened? You know, and that's how it's gone along. And I really never looked back. Even that first trip to India, I was like, all these other countries I wanted to go to just disappeared. And it was all India all the time since then.
I love that. Did you know that you wanted to write, or like, what was the thing that drew you in? Was it the recipes? Cause you're so known for that. You know, like I have some of your other cookbooks. I remember when your first cookbook came out and I was just like, oh, this is so nice. You know, like this is like sort of demystifying some of the recipes that I've eaten in India, and it's helping me to make these things. Right. I know you have like this ability to kind of unpack, like, how do we actually do this? Was it the food, since you started talking about digestive health and food?
You know, the reason, Paula, that the food thing happened in my career was because I was practicing. So I was an Ayurvedic consultant. You know, I was working with a lot of people, and most of them seemed confused about food. You know, they'd sit down across from me and they would be confused or guilty or scared or all of these kind of not very empowered emotions around food, or they didn't cook at all because I lived in a city at the time. So, you know, and I realized that, you know, we have all this knowledge of the drug yoguna or the substances and their effects on the body and their medicinal potencies. And there's no use knowing that if you can't get them into a person's body, you know? So the cooking became really important, that it's like, oh, you need more kale. And they don't know what to do. Like, I've seen people take a leaf of kale and be like mystified, you know, by like what to do with it. So that's why I got into the cooking skills. Not necessarily because I'm a chef. I'm totally not. I'm not even a great cook, to be honest. Like, I just cook a lot of my own food and don't like to eat out a lot. So I'm constantly making food, but it's not like a fancy thing. It's very utilitarian. And I think that's what I offered for people who are busy and who don't really need it to be special or fancy, but need it to be nourishing so they can like get on with it and simple and fast. That's what my clients wanted. And I felt that we didn't have that in a way that people were drawn to it. People kept coming in and be like, well, I have this Ayurveda cookbook, but I don't know what my dosha is, so I never use it. I heard that so many times, Paula, that I was like, okay, we're taking the doshas out, you know, we're not talking about that. And so I put the seasons in instead, which makes it a lot more user-friendly.
Totally. And I mean, just to say, for those of you who have not been exposed to Kate's cookbooks, they are quite beautiful and the recipes are full of really beautiful spices. And when you're cooking, you're having a sensory experience. So when you say utilitarian, it's like these are doable recipes, but they don't lack that sumptuousness that makes you like want to eat, you know, just for the record.
Right. They're not gross. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what it is that food, you realize that food itself is beautiful, you know, yeah. when it's natural and fresh, like it has color and aroma and texture and all these things. Mm. And we just have to train ourselves to pay attention.
Totally. One thing that struck me when I opened your chart, because you so kindly gave me your birth chart information, and I was thinking, wow, you have such an entrepreneurial chart, but you also have a really innovator chart. So I want to just kind of have you talk about that, because so many people who I work with are innovators, meaning the nodes, Rahu and Ketu, are having some influence on active planets, the first house. You know, there's some combinations that can be identifying an innovator, but maybe just speak to that. Like, what is it like to be on the cutting edge, to kind of have to be a few steps ahead of maybe where the culture is? But you know that that's where you need to be, and like how to embody that maybe.
Yeah, I would say that it doesn't feel like somewhere I need to be. It has just always been like that. I have this joke that like this weird thing always happens to me where Paula, like I'll be like, I need a pair of overalls. You know, I'm just dying for a pair of overalls, and like I can't find them. 2 years later, everyone's wearing overalls. You know, it happens to me like moon boots. Remember moon boots? I want a pair of moon boots. You know, so that kind of thing happens to me. I don't know why. But as far as the career goes, you know, and being an innovator in Ayurveda, it's that necessity is the mother of invention. So I think that I am gregarious, so I am around people. I like to be around people a lot. And so I'm always engaging with people talking about Ayurveda. And then I hear the things that don't work for them, you know, or their insecurities around it, or why they think it won't work for them. I hear those things all the time from people. And it tends to be the same, in the same vein, over and over. And then I'll be like, we have a problem right here. This thing is keeping people from this healing system that would probably help them. And so whatever that thing is, you know, I just go after it. So it was cooking, you know, and then with women's health, I'm feeling a thing, which is a lack of honest communication and conversation and storytelling, I think, which has already changed just in the few years since I started reading or writing that book. But I was like, no, we need more people like shouting from the mountaintops what's going on with their body so that we're getting this body of wisdom together. And I didn't feel that we had that, but like the overalls, you know, this was like 3 years ago. And now I think I'm seeing more of it. Maybe it's just my algorithm, but I'm definitely seeing a lot more conversation about women's health.
Absolutely. But I think you're riding the wave, you know, with this offering. And I just want to pull out something too for the listeners. It's like, if you're an innovator, listening to the people around you is a really good way to find out. And I always tell people to do market research. You know, when you're actually developing an idea, you want to talk to people who are your ideal client and find out what are their problems. So you don't have to be gregarious to do that, but you can make an effort to really be listening to people and, you know, take polls on social media and like ask people to come do tea chats with you and ask them strategic questions. But that's so important because that's how you kind of get the pulse of what's needed. And then you can produce what's needed and then it will be purchased.
Yeah. Oh, it's so true. Absolutely. Yeah. And when I, like with that first book, I also could tell. So we had the dosha problem That was clear that people didn't use the books because they weren't clear on the dosha translation for in their body. And then the other thing was that we didn't have a pretty one, you know? And so I was like, ooh, this needs to be beautiful as well, you know? And I think just that publishing had changed since Amadea's book, for example, you know, Ayurvedic Cooking for Westerners is a great book, but it didn't have any pictures, you know, it wasn't glossy. That's not how they did like the hippie cookbooks at that time. So that was like clearly a lack that we needed that kind of beautiful thing. I feel that lack with women's health and Ayurveda. Like we really do not have a lot of literature, as you say, that's specific to that population right now.
Yeah. So you wanted to talk about the kind of changes that would happen in women's bodies over time, like the stages of life. So talk us through like some of the content that's inside of here. There's also like recipes, as we talked about, that are specific. So maybe you can talk to us about like what was your selection process like for those specific recipes?
Yes, the way that I organized the book in my heart was around the ashramas or the stages of life. And it's during the different stages of life, women's organs, you know, the I call it the generative system rather than reproductive, which assumes that you want to reproduce, you know. So instead, there's this idea central to the book that is that the Shakti or the woman energy it's the generative energy of the cosmos, you know, that creative energy that is always moving, you know, and our bodies are always moving and changing, and we're generators. So the body has to generate blood, you know, on this regular basis. And we have the creation of the endometrial lining, the shedding of the lining. We have the movements of the follicles and the ovary. Everything is there's this, all this moving around going on in this very small part of the body. And that very small part of the body is all governed by the Vata dosha, the sort of space and air. And I found very easily upon what kind of small amount of classical literature there is on women's health that if Vata is managed well, there will be much fewer diseases of the reproductive organs or generative organs. So there's a lot of Vata management in the book. And as we move through stages of life, we're looking at not only Vata, but how like any of the doshas might vitiate these organs and their functions. So I look at it from like the actual tissues, like a very physical perspective, but also a functional perspective, where what is the like energy? And I feel like, why is energy moving or not moving? Why is it moving too fast or too slow? Or why is it like emanating outside of its natural territory? This is where I get really interested right now, you know, in the conversation for us, you know, that we want to be thinking about and feeling in our bodies. Like when I wrote this book, I spent a lot of time with like friends in my life, and they all have kids, you know, they're like really in the thick of it. And I spent time with older women, I spent time with younger women, you know, and just trying to like, just feel what, you know, there's so many differences to what we're interacting with through this generative system at these different stages of life, whether it's menarche, fertility, birth control, and then we move into sort of the management of those busy years of life. And I think stress management is really important, making sure that, you know, the energy keeps moving properly and that we have the proper nutrition to, if we're going to birth babies, we have to go through all that and then raise them. Even if we're not, you know, their body is still doing this regenerative process every, you know, 28 days or so. It's a big deal. So we have to really like nourish and circulate. And then, of course, what seems to be the very hot topic in my algorithm right now is perimenopause and menopause transitions. And I do feel like Ayurveda has a super sophisticated message for us, not sophisticated, but actually easy to absorb and understand, that has to do with how we shift our nourishment and our circulation, the circulation of energy, not just like our vascular health, but like the circulation of energy, which is where I'm most excited. So we're looking at like how is our subtle body operating during these phases of life and the different kinds of responsibilities and demands and the different motivational factors that guide us, because this is something I've seen in my practice with women is as we transition into a perimenopause and a menopause phase of life, what we want changes. And that is huge. So it's like that, which is, you know, we're in the grasp of moving towards or away from things because of our desires. And desires are, you know, I think all my years of yoga, I learned that desires are bad, but desires are, it's a dharma, like we're being guided, you know?
I agree.
So it's totally like we're being guided and, but we're like, as we transition, we're being guided in different ways and that it's natural. It's natural, it's personal, and it's individual, and it's unique. And we have all these messages coming at us, you know, from the outside that are like, oh, you should be doing this, you should be doing that. And it's like, no, you know, there's this really rich inner world that's like moving and growing and generating. And it's like taking us through life. And it's freaking awesome. And I think that if we are tapped into that, then we are the generators. We are living the dharma that we're meant to be living. And we're following the desires that our karmas have seeded in us, you know? And that, I think, is fantastic. And I just want women to just like grab that by the horns and just like have at it, like live this life. I think it's just a fantastic way of looking at our existence and how we're being guided through life and its changes.
Absolutely. I'm really impressed with the thoroughness of this book. You know, like for those of you who are listening, you may have familiarity already with certain ideas in Ayurveda, even with some of the Dinacharya, the like self-care practices, the daily practices that you do. You may have some familiarity with the stages of life. You know, maybe you're in one and you've been researching it like I am in perimenopause. Like, okay, now I've got to get my head around this, right? But there's like a nice way that the things are brought together so that we really get a deeper understanding of how to, like I said, like put on the lenses of this is for women. So this is, you know, these recipes are specifically for us, you know? So thank you for that. I'm wondering if maybe you can talk a little bit about like your writing process and what's that like for you? Like, how does that, as a person who's trying to write a book, I'm also just very curious for myself, but I'm sure other people are wondering as well, like whether it's a cookbook or, you know, any other kind of book, just to hear a little bit about your process.
Oh yeah. I love to talk about it. And I have wanted to, when I was a little kid, I used to say I wanted to be a writer. You know, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? I would say a writer. So my process is different than a lot of people's in that I like to have the book already in contract with a publisher before I write it.
And that's much easier to do with a nonfiction book than it is with like a fiction book.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. So I work really hard on the market comps and the proposal, you know, and I think in the outline. So that to me is a beautiful phase that I spent 6 months on just letting it like, I like your word incubate that you use a lot. So I incubate for like 6 months on. And it really feels to me, you probably know what I mean here is like, I really feels like it's dropping through these holes in the firmament into my consciousness. It's not mine. And it's going to take however long it's going to take. I can't like get up there and drag it through any faster than, you know? So yeah. There's really this like space, like I create space for about 6 months in my consciousness for this thing. I like feel around for it. I think that's where I get a lot of these sensations of innovation, of the things that haven't been spoken in the way that we want to hear them now, today, in this time. Or to this population, you know? So I spent 6 months on that. And then, you know, I try to get the gig because I am not like that self-motivated that I'm going to write. I totally respect people who write books and don't know what happens next. I think that's an amazing quality. I didn't have that at all. You know, having the proposal done and knowing, then I get a schedule. That's, again, I make it up still, and I'm still like, I could still say, I need an extension, you know? So what, like, my publisher would be like, okay. But I like to really not work on a book for more than a year and a half because I'm cooking. Like I'm physically cooking. Like my pitta is high, my vata is high. Like there's things that I can't really tolerate for more than like 18 months. So I get on a pretty tight schedule. I shut down a lot of other work, which has, that's been problematic. It's been getting harder and harder to do that with my business, to slow it down or shut it down. And then I'm not one of those work like 2 hours in the morning people. I'm all or nothing. So I'll do like a 3 week heat, you know, where I work like 4 to 6 hours for every day for, and I don't take days off. Like I just work every day for like 3 weeks, and then I'll take a break for like months, a couple months. And then again, the firmament is waving and moving and things are happening there. And then when it's time, you know, I really have a sensation when it's time after but probably about 3 months, I'll sit down for like the next heat and I feel it like coming through my arms and hands, you know, and it's like, I can't type fast enough because it's finally coming through. And it's like this very electric feeling. And for me, I think my process is a lot about space, making space and time and allowing for, and then when that electricity starts like moving through my body, it can't be for too long because I'll get sick.
Like, yeah, interesting.
I can't hold it. I think I could push myself to be more strategic and a little less all over the place with it, but there's something about the crazy nature of the journey that I also really enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, it's that Mars energy that you're describing. So it's like you are in your Mars period. As we're speaking, Mars is exalted in the sky. Like I'm about to go into my Mars period. So it makes a lot of sense that we both have this entrepreneurial drive because Mars is really the planet of entrepreneurship, but also it rules your third house. So it's the ruler of your writing house and it's hanging out with Venus in Venus's sign. So it's got this like supercharged creative energy and it's across from the moon. And this is something I also noticed when I looked at your chart is that you're in a period of Mars and a sub period of moon, and those are actually across from each other. And that's a certain kind of combination that is really good for supporting women. So it's a signature in your chart, but then it's activated right now, which is so beautiful that the book is coming out during this period. So I wanted to share that with you.
Oh, I love that, Paula. I get a little, I do get a little nervous because this period is ending like a month after the book is released. And I'm looking to like, I feel like the ride is going to get a little bit more wild.
Because of Rahu, you mean?
Yeah. And I'm like a little nervous about it because the Mars has been good for me. Like I've been kicking ass for a number of years and it's been steady. And feels great, you know? I like kicking ass, but now I'm like, I think I might be getting my ass kicked for a little while.
Well, there's a couple of things to keep in mind. Like when we look at your chart, Rahu's in the first. And when Rahu's in the first, generally the person is still trying to figure out who they are, what they're, you know, they're trying to project outward into the world. So I don't think your career is going to like shift in any way. Like there'll be some continuity, but at the same time, it's with the sun and sun's in a trade with your ruling planet that's in the 12th house. So what's really interesting about that is I see more foreign travel. I see more like emphasis on India, maybe leading retreats, like having some other thing that you're doing, maybe doing your own retreats, like taking time off the grid, you know? And so you can get ahead of the curve by like planning that in, because what we want to do when we have that kind of karma that pulls us out of the world is to like work with it rather than work against it.
Yeah. I love that you're saying that because that's exactly what I'm cooking up. Like at Vidyagrama, like that's exactly what is in the works, is a place of personal retreat for myself in India.
Yeah. The other thing is that, you know, Rahu acts like your ruling planet because it's in your first house, which is ruled by Mercury. So like, this desire to be gregarious, to communicate, to write, like that's not going to go away. It may get amplified in certain ways. Like you may become more visible. Like I've seen people with Rahu in the first, there's like more demands for them to be seen, to be on bigger stages, to be like, it's time for you to go on the Today Show, Kate.
Yeah. Which I heard you mention that in a podcast that the Today Show came up, which is so funny because I, for the first time ever on my fourth book now, I hired a publicist. So like I am moving in that direction in a very, very strategic way that it's scary. It's scary for me. Like I worry that I'll travel too much and be outward too much with it. But at the same time, you know, I have like 45 years of Dinacharya behind me. So it's also like a fun challenge.
Totally. Yeah. And that's the thing, like just outline what places feel aligned and go like be on those podcasts and be, you know, on those stages. And I think it'll be moving with the tide of this shift into Rahu in a good way. So the other good news is that Rahu matures at 42. So you've got that behind you as well.
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate hearing that. I love talking about that. Thank you.
Yeah. And so like this kind of dovetails nicely into the aspect of the book that I really appreciate is this talking about the moon and the energy of the moon and how women can work with that energy specifically. I know you and I had a conversation several years ago. I don't even know if that influenced you, but like that piece of the book really resonated with me because you took whatever we talked about and you took it much deeper. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about that and like how women can work with the moon specifically and why should we work with the moon?
Yeah. So I remember I was in this same place traveling where I am now when I interviewed you. Yeah. Because I learned mostly about lunar cycles from my yoga practice and yoga traditions where it's very much baked in. You know, like I practiced Ashtanga yoga for many, many years and the whole community takes the new moon and the full moon off. And like all the women in the whole place start menstruating on the same day. The place is empty, is half empty, you know? And that was all, I grew up like that. I lived in houses with yogis where everyone would be talking about their, I'm not going to class, I have my period. And it was, you know, we were all in this flow together and it was natural to talk about it, natural to experience it and to notice that our bodies were, because I also spent a number of years on Maui. When I was in my like most heavy studentship of yoga, the moon was so strong there because the ocean and the tides and like I could literally hear the tides get greater when the moon was larger. It's funny to me because in my research, I respect so much how in modern times we're using modern research to prove to ourselves that which the ancients have been saying, that it's true, in quotes, right? I totally respect that. It's not what I do. And when I tried looking around at research around, does the moon affect women's cycles or bodies, right? You'd hear, no, I'm sorry, there's no conclusive evidence, right? And then I'm thinking, I hear that ocean, I feel that moon. You know, I'm noticing differences in my sleep. You can see it in the eyes. I had a friend who used to say, you have sita eyes. Whenever I was ovulating, he could like tell, you know, that they'd get all like water and bigger, like they actually look bigger, you know, and these things would go with the moon. In biodynamic farming, they plant at the full moon because the moon literally pulls the water element to the surface. So there's like more juice for the seeds. And so the moon is pulling the water element to the surface or to the forefront in our bodies. Makes total sense to me, probably to you too, right? I'm like, duh, you know, of course it's affecting, you know, the water element in our bodies. And so from an Ayurvedic perspective, the implications of that then become very obvious. You know, that we're juicier, we have more water, we have more kapha, we could say. Kapha is that building block of fertility. Just such a cool concept in Ayurveda. We need another podcast, but it's so cool. So what we're looking at is this basic, like more juicy, more brahmanar, more grounding, full and creative energies as the moon is getting bigger, becoming full. And then as the moon is becoming dark, there's a turn inward. And I think in present day, especially because we are so busy and there are so many demands on our senses and our attention, if we were to track a cycle that drew us inward on a regular rhythmic way, you know, like once a month or so, that it's just natural to like just maybe just stay home that night, you know, read, do cozy things or just like, or do something very intentional where you're just spending that time with your internal world. I feel like we don't get as many messages from our day-to-day conversation about doing that. And that's baked into the lunar cycle, you know, that you go big And then you go, I want to say small, but you go in, you go out and you go in. And I think we need that kind of a cycle.
Yes.
Energetically.
I feel like I plan in my business. I mean, I've been in my moon period for 10 years now. I've had to work with the moon, whether I wanted to or not. So in my business, like right now, the moon is waning. So I'm like doing less. I'm planning less. I'm creating more spaciousness just in case I need like a little bit more time to zone out or read a book or sit by the fire, right? And then in those 2 weeks leading up until the full moon, I'm usually like super juiced up and like excited and getting, I have lots of ideas, you know, and it probably also correlates with my cycle if I really looked at it. But yeah, I just love that. And so you included a lot of information on what we can do during those times. And I love that you put on the full moon, celebrate. It's something I talk about a lot. Like we don't celebrate enough, but this is like, how can we bring people together and actually have those moments of like joy that make life worth living and then move inward and have that time that's like more quiet, internal, reflective at the new moon. So I'm excited about all of that.
Yeah, me too. And I also got a lot of feedback from my community of women asking, well, what about when you don't menstruate? What's the cycle? And I'm like, oh yeah, well, there's a cycle. Let's talk about that. You know, you don't, it's not just about when you ovulate and when you bleed, like there's this whole other thing that I think I would venture to say affects us more when we're no longer bleeding. So those lunar movements then I think become even more profound in how they affect us.
Cool. Yeah. I'm looking forward to finding out. I'm always telling my mom, I can't wait until I'm not bleeding. And she's like, don't say that. But I do see the women in my life who are in menopause as like, they've got something figured out. Like once they're on the other side of that, there's like a wisdom body that gets activated that I am looking forward to being a part of that. So
me too.
Yeah. And I think that's also like a message that we don't often get is to embrace aging. Like the joys of each stage are there for us. We don't have to fear or feel like, you know, we're losing something as we age. So I don't know if you want to speak to that too.
Yeah, that's a tough one personally for me. I do have some fear of aging for sure. And it's the wisdom is the good part that comes. And I think that one of the things I'm noticing now is the shift towards serving others. As we, that is something like I really want to be in a place of service when I'm older. It really bothers me the way that we treat our elderly, our elders. I do not love to see that. I think we're the ones now, like our generation, that need to change this. It's a funny thing because as we age, I believe in the stages of life as prescribed by the Vedic wisdom, which is that you do move internally and more towards spiritual practice as you get older. I look forward to that a lot. I project that I'm going to be cooking. I do move into Saturn, like, you know, in my very late years as well. I feel like I'm going to be cooking in a pot of like final karmas for this body. And I'm trying to make that space by being productive now. You know, in order to set up the space so that I don't have to work and I have a place where I can just like be quietly, you know, doing spiritual practice when I'm older. I think in the same way that we need more conversation and storytelling about women's health, we need that also about healthy aging. You know, we need to talk more and listen more and ask more about the aging process and really understand it from those who are living it now and look to the positives of it. And I think there's something about being truly awake that excites me about getting older, that it's all consciousness, you know, the changes and that the body undergoes, those are the ones that we culturally in this particular moment in time are at odds with. But the changes in consciousness as we get older are pretty exciting to be attuned to the cosmos. I feel as the body dissipates, the mind begins to go back, you know, to the cosmos. I think that I look forward to that. I look forward to more sort of moments of togetherness with the cosmos as I get older.
What I'm thinking of while I'm listening to you is how Dr. Robert Sobota always says, like, you want to be like Ayurveda helps you go along so that you kind of gradually age, and it's not a huge like drop off. I'm using my hands and kind of showing like falling off a cliff right now for those who are just listening. But Ayurveda gives us that tool to kind of help us age more gracefully so that we don't notice our bodies as much as we're aging. Of course, we're going to like, that's the thing that I feel attached to is I look in the mirror and I'm like, wow, I'm getting older, you know, and wow, my body feels different than it did. I feel sore in places that I used to not feel sore after doing what I just did or whatever. So those are the pieces that I think Ayurveda can be a real asset and an ally for us as we age so that we can tap in more to this wisdom body, this wisdom and connection that we can tap into with more ease.
Just the back to the food bit, the final chapter in the book on Rasayana is where we get that, like the longevity medicine. And so I was very excited to make recipes for things that we can actually do in our kitchen to support the body in the aging process, to kind of, as you say, make it more of a slow transition. That is, I think, one of the sort, we could say, top aims of Ayurveda is to be a longevity medicine.
I am curious because I really look at business as a spiritual practice. I would like to hear from you, like, do you view it like that? Or how do you see Dharma? Like, how do you see business in the place of like your Dharma and how that works together?
I would love, Paula, to say that like, yes, the bigger my business, the more I serve and the better I feel. But for me, it's personal growth. The whole thing about it is how the business, the work of the business pushes me to be in places where I'm uncomfortable, to have to advocate for myself in ways that are, that push my buttons. There's things about business that were super intimidating for me for so many years that it has pushed me to be a greater version of myself to do it. The busier it gets, you know, and the bigger it gets, I view that as the kind of challenge that makes me more of who I'm supposed to be in this lifetime. Like I can feel that my business is what I'm supposed to be doing because it's like the fire that's forging me into the person that I'm supposed to be in this lifetime. Just in the way that like any relationship, right, changes you and makes you grow. Mm-hmm. That's what it feels like.
No, I mean, for me, that's analogous with what I was sharing. It's like, I definitely feel like my spiritual practice, you know, I had gotten to a place of being able to do these longer retreats and, you know, just totally check out, you know, and I was like, what would be the hardest thing I could possibly do? Oh, go heal my financial situation and start a business and buy my dream farm. Like, and all the things I have had to come up against and work through as a result of that, it's burned a lot of karmas. But it's taken like that work that I did in meditation or in yoga or whatever. It's forced me to contend with the parts of it that were uncooked, the things that needed to be refined, like by putting myself in this position where I'm projecting outward and I'm being visible and I'm sharing my thoughts aloud with groups of thousands who I don't know. You know what I mean? So I definitely agree with you. It's personal growth, the kind that I like your word forges us into what we're becoming. So that's great. So I have a few rapid fire questions for you. So what is one piece of advice that has really helped you in your life?
Oh, that one was actually from Dr. Svoboda when I wanted to learn about Ayurveda. And he said, learn it in English, like do it in America. Yeah. It was not what I wanted to hear, but man, that was some good advice at the time.
Because you were going to try to go to school in India? Is that?
Yeah. Yes. That's why I was talking to him, because I figured he would confirm that for me. And uh-huh. He totally didn't. And I remember like kind of slamming down the phone after. Yeah. But he was totally right. And it is probably the core reason why I am able to transmit the art and science of Ayurveda in the way that I can, is because of how I learned it.
Mm. So tell us about your morning routine. What part is non-negotiable for you?
Oh man, that is like, I'm getting my buttons pushed around morning routine right now because of the business. Mm-hmm. But I think that the non-negotiable is the hot water. Mm-hmm. I talked recently about my travel kettle, my electric travel kettle. Like that is so important to me. hot water first thing.
I love that. And is movement a big part of what you do? I've started doing like weightlifting recently because I know that that's so key. So for like the last year, I've been working out with a trainer and that's been life changing. So
me too. That's funny, for exactly a year. Yeah. I mean, I have to do movement. I have to do movement every day for mental as well as physical reasons. It runs the gamut in terms of what kind of movement I do. It's not like it's always yoga. It was for many, many years, but now it's had to become more diverse and that feels better for my body right now.
Me too. Yeah. My yoga practice has shifted a lot as I age and it's interesting to see people in their 20s and how they want to do yoga. And then I'm like, I am not like that anymore. It's just so clear for me. But yeah, it speaks to what you were saying. But I was curious too, because Mars is such a physical planet, you know, and like when that planet energy is moving through us, it's like, you got to move. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it hasn't been physical, Paula. The movement has been very much about, it's been like, I bought a house, I started a business, you know, it's all about those kind of moves. Because I think I was moving and I was fully embodied for 15 years before the Mars period started.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mars is an important player in your chart, so that makes sense. And you would have been in your moon period before that, and Mars is aspecting onto moon. So it was always there, kind of in the background. Okay, so what are you reading right now? Or is there a book that you would recommend that's like a kind of one that you return to?
Right now, I'm reading Being Mortal, and that is about the industry of elder care in America. It's a tough read, but it's really good. It's so well done. So I'm reading that. And then the one that's the things that I keep going back to, I'm actually reading Charlotte Bronte.
I love. Yeah. Anything from the 1800s, like right before industrialization, I love.
Yep. Me too. And Little House on the Prairie, I loved that whole series too.
Awesome. So where can people connect with you? Tell us about the book again. Like, where can they buy it, pre-sale, when it comes out? Let us know all the details.
Yeah. So Everyday Ayurveda for Women's Health is released on April 23rd. I created some audio bonuses. So because I feel that people are a little busy right now to sit with a book as meaty as this one. So I recorded the preliminary chapters. And so when you pre-order now, you get access to Claudia Welch's foreword, to my introduction, and to chapter one, me reading it. So if people want to pre-order through whoever your bookseller is, you pre-order now. There's a link we can put in the show notes that you just put in your order number and you get those tracks now. So if you're excited that you can listen now, and then the book will just ship. So it'll just show up on your doorstep like around the 23rd of April.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share before we jump off?
I would just share that people can find me at ayurvedicliving.institute. That is my learning management platform where it all goes down. And that's where I put most of my Shakti at the moment. Also, I'm on Instagram a lot. So it's at kateodonnell.ayurveda. There's a lot of action going down there right now.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I really love chatting with you. I feel like like I say it and you, I can see that you just totally feel it, which is a great thing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah. Everyone go buy the book.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cosmic Business Podcast. We hope it was inspiring for you. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave a review for us so other spirit-led entrepreneurs can find out about us. I want to thank Team Podcast for production support on this podcast, as well as the musicians of the music that we're listening to now, Alexis Georgopoulos and Jeffrey Cantu Ledesma from an album Fragments of a Season, which you can check out wherever you listen to music. I hope you have a wonderful day, and I look forward to connecting with you on a future episode.